Snow in paradise. Is it always this hot?
Too hot.
The average temperature is 84.7. Average rainfall, 82 inches per annum. Wind speed.
Okay.
6.2 knots out of the southwest.
All right.
We also experience...
Stop!
The occasional... monsoon.
Welcome to Checker Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast covering many, many years of Cartoon Network's history.
I'm Funky. I'm Fred.
Not now, boy. I'm busy. Tonight's the third night.
Aloha, Toonheads. Would you like some fresh turtle soup? Or perhaps I could interest you in some coconut milk with a little paper umbrella? I'm your host, B-Dubs, and this is Checker Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast dedicated to all things animation from the 1990s to the early 2000s. You know, I've been needing a little R&R lately after the constant stream of episodes I've been pumping out. So today we're heading to my favorite remote vacation spot where, well, nobody knows the actual location, except the creators of this show. I'm talking, of course, about Mike, Lou, and Og, a charming, hand-drawn, short-lived animated series spawned from Russia, of all places. Ready to wash ashore to see what this cartoon is all about? All right, let's dive in, let's land on sand instead, shall we? So here are the origins of Mike, Lou, and Og. Apparently it started out with a pilot named Crash Lancelot that initially aired once What Cartoon Show got rebranded as The Cartoon Show on November 6, 1998. It was successful enough to be picked up for a series alongside Courage the Cowardly Dog and I Am Weasel, a tune previously existing between Cow and Chicken segments on their own show. The pilot involved Mike and Og building a simple vehicular transport out of natural materials to get to the beach and out of the sun. Naturally, Lou didn't want to put in any hard work, so she relied on a nuclear-powered luxury car with her pet turtle Lancelot at the wheel to get her there. You can guess what happens next by its title.
Oh, how splendid! Now that is a car! Nice. Very nice. Wait! Hello? Where are you going?
The pilot kicked off the Cartoon Weekend Marathon, along with other pilots available at the time, like Kenny and the Chimp or Utica Cartoon, where it was warmly received, so it was shortly picked up for the series. There are some notable differences between this short and the series shorts before we move on that I'd like to point out. In addition to it being just 7 minutes long, instead of the standard 11, in order to follow What Cartoon's 3 short format per half hour. I also noticed that the credit sequence is a bit different with little vignettes of characters doing some sort of action in a loop, many of which would foreshadow future episodes, such as Lancelot on roller skates or Lou walking on elevator sandals, among others. It's also worth noting that Queeks, the old guy, the really, really old guy, he makes an appearance in these credits, despite not being in the short at all. And that goes for the pirates and the talking animals too, which I thought was really interesting. Conversely, Wendell is absent even though he was in the short, but I'm sure they're hinting at what's to come by teasing all these characters here if they had them in development already. Lastly, this was just one of 2 episodes in the series directed by Mikhail Aldyshyn, who served as the co-creator responsible for the look of the show, which was influenced by his time working on both Rugrats and Hot Real Monsters at Klasky Supo before.
Come on, we're gonna find pirate treasure.
Show info, of course, is Mike, Lou, and Og, and it was created by 3 co-creators, Mikhail Shindel, Mikhail Aldyshyn, and Charles Swenson. It was produced by Pilot Films in Moscow alongside Kino Films in LA, and they all had different roles in creating the look of the show. The theme music was by Igor Yuzov, and the theme and credits music was performed by the band The Red Elvises. The composer for the in-show music was Oleg Burnov, so mostly a Russian cast for everything that you hear throughout the show. The format basically involves a lighthearted 2D animated comedy comprising of 52 11-minute segments contained in 26 episodes over 2 seasons. It is the 7th original cartoon to be made for the channel, trailing behind Dexter's Lab, Johnny Bravo, Cow and Chicken, Powerpuff Girls, and Ed, Edd n Eddy in that order. The air dates of this show was November 12, 1999 to May 27, 2001. Although, unfortunately, it was the first cartoon to be canceled. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Not much is known about Kino Film, you know, that had a hand in production, other than it was formed in 1996 by Mikhail Shindel after leaving Acme Filmworks, which was an independent film studio where Time Squad creator Dave Lawson also created short animated films. You may remember from the previous episode that we covered one of his episodes of Time Squad, Betsy Ross Flies Her Freak Flag for the 4th of July. Take a look at that if you're interested. Apparently, the only production under Kino Film's belt in its history was Mike Lou and Og, so there's not much more information that could be found on the internet, even when I dig deep, but it is what it is.
Oh, I don't like it.
Oh, would you come do this for the coconut?
Oh, I say, how am I doing?
No worse than anyone else, and that's a problem.
Some things that I noted about the details of Mike Lou and Og, since the premise is pretty bare bones, is that the island's name is Algonquin, which is what all the natives borrow their last name from on the right side of the island. There's also a group of people in their own tribe called the Cuzzlewits, and they don't really get along too well with the Algonquins. They're a bit more primitive in their behavior, and we get to see them interact with them in the school episode where Mike tries to teach them lessons. But other than that, we don't get too many interactions with them. They kind of like to do their own thing.
Jeez, I don't know what to say. I just remember what I wanted to say. Leave me alone!
Apparently also, there were British shipwrecks on the island that they all inhabit. And the survivors who lived on the island generations removed from this cast also appear in Night of the Living Ancestors episode, which is kind of a creepy one, where they come back as ghosts and interact with the current generation to either complain or suggest things that are different to their current culture, which I thought was really interesting, how they juxtapose the two groups.
And further, the cultural imperative and social unrest during the Middle Ages should have special significance to us today, simply because of the parallels that can be drawn between modern societal modes and the tracks of the common wheelbarrow.
Speaking of culture, the one that you can kind of sense with all the dialogue between all the different characters and all the activities that they do for fun, that emerged from inhabitants building their own village through a blend of English and Polynesian traditions, although it's a little bit disjointed and inconsistent with actual history of each country. The Algonquin's mayor, Wendell, often regales the islanders in deeper lore behind the artifacts whenever they come across them, such as a teacup, and he serves as a historian to any items left over from the initial settlement. So it's nice that he gives us a bite-sized history lesson whenever he's present or ever they find something of use. However, the island's traditions would be disrupted with fresh modern ideas once Michelin, or known to the viewers as Mike Mazinski, arrived on the island. She doesn't go by the traditional Polynesian or British traditions because she's from Brooklyn, New York, via foreign exchange program. And naturally, because she's American, she sees the opportunity to visit a remote island and just enjoy it a little bit as a vacation, an extended one. Personally, I never heard such a thing for a middle school program to exist. But my wife once did a residency program on the Cook Islands in her post-college years off the shores of New Zealand. So I guess it's still probable, but not as often as you'd think.
No inline skates for this princess. You know what we need here, guys? We need a sidewalk.
Oh, sure. Something else we need.
Mikhail Shindel's LA production company, Kino Film, did partner with Studio Pilot in Russia to handle the animation duties, but it was mostly outsourced to a Korean company to handle the actual animation. It was really more split between backgrounds and storyboards and production layout more than anything between the two. The show is characterized by a charming watercolor background assortment with stylized, simplified line art, often sometimes in a broken, squiggly look. And the look and the feel suggests, you know, a child handcrafted these characters, which lends itself to the relaxed premise of killing time with friends while exploring nooks and crannies of the limited geography of the island. Considering the show's slice of life nature, there's no real overarching story to unify or signify progression or growth in any of these characters. Even the main trio, it's really just more like a case-by-case basis on whether or not they can handle the conflicts of new cultural ideas introduced to them, such as money, elections, TV, baseball, video games. And it's really just seeing how it unfolds and how they handle it, with the occasional conflict from pirates or Kozlowitz who try to wreak havoc, but really they do so in a tame way that it doesn't feel like any of the characters' lives are ever threatened, which may work for or against the show, depending on how you view it. The series ended up ending with the episode Sleeping Ugly, where a crabby old woman named Hortense has been awakened after 100-year slumber and causes misery to all until she is laid to rest once again. Can't say this is the best way to end this series, but it is what it is. I'm pretty sure the co-creators wanted to go on to a third season, but I think due to creative differences and the cumbersome demands of relying on two production companies to co-produce this while they're literally countries apart made it unfeasible in the long run to keep the show going. So it's understandable that it didn't go as far as it had wanted to. There aren't too many themes going on across the episodes of Mike, Lou, and Og beyond celebrating diversity and bridging the gap between Mike and the Algonquins, the Kozlowitz, and the pirates. And that's evident and common throughout most of these episodes that you'll see again and again. Though I do appreciate that regardless of these themes of diversity and acceptance, it's really nice to see how the main trio balances each other's personalities with each other, because you got Mike, who's like a very street smart New Yorker who likes a lot of sports, comics, learning new things, creature comforts of America like TV, etc. And then you get Og, who's genuinely curious but doesn't say much, and he's quite intelligent, and he tends to whip up whatever he can in his invention hut due to Mike's suggestions to try it out with the rest of the islanders. And it's a lot of fun to see how they receive these inventions, whether they embrace them or they seem to be consumed by them. Very much like how Og got addicted to video games in this one episode, where it started raining to the point where there was a massive flood and all he could think about was getting the high score in the middle of a thunderstorm. So it was pretty wild to see, and was a moment for self-reflection, as I too can be quite addicted to video games at times.
Okay, next game, I'll just... Hey! It beat me again! This isn't a game. This is punishment.
Moving back to the history of the show, I do have to say that it was canceled due to poor ratings at the time when they were shifting to Cartoon Fridays. And the three co-creators pretty much had a falling out due to not agreeing on who is really in charge among the three. This also contributes to the lack of a third season, though I'm sure there's some demand. Likewise, the viewer reception is a bit mixed, even if it does seem like a very happy-go-lucky show, where it seemed like the kids who remember this show fondly really enjoyed its laid-back setting, but the adults disagreed, saying that they quickly grew tired of its aimless small-stakes adventures. And I think depending on what demographic you see this show for really depends on your perspective. I myself grew up with it, so I enjoyed the charming, classy, Supo-esque look. Though I do find myself not wanting to watch this in large chunks, preferring just like an episode or two per sitting to enjoy the overall island feel more and getting less into the politics and the nitty-gritty of their adventures and interactions with other islanders. Although that's not to say there aren't any good things here. I mean, there is. The roller skating episode was a blast to watch. Even seeing, Mike listen to her boombox and then Creeks get upset at her only to have the ghosts of the previous ancestors enjoy the boombox was a fun turn of events. So that's kind of the slice of life plot that's going on that you'd expect in the show. It really depends on which episode you watch. I don't think there's any strong or weak one. It's just a matter of what kind of topic of the day you prefer.
Unless you do something, you're going to lose the election. Everybody's going to vote for Mike, and we'll be out on the sand.
I did note that there's also a second wind of Mike, Lou, and Og despite its cancellation due to a brief revival of reruns over on Boomerang when it became its own channel. And this lasted from 2006 to 2011 and had a brief return in 2017 due to demand. So that was fun to see it still live on for people who wanted reruns, or at least remember it fondly.
The natives are getting restless, so don't go anywhere. There's more of Mike, Lou, and Og on the way on Boomerang.
As far as I've seen, it was last on streaming services during the pandemic in 2020, mostly on HBO Max, although it was on Amazon Prime and a few others as well, but can currently be found as release date of this podcast episode on YouTube via the channel Monkey the Channel, which has like a pink Hanna-Barbera cat as the logo avatar. So if you're interested in checking out these episodes for yourself and getting your own impressions, go look that up on YouTube. I recommend it. So I talked a little bit about the characters of the show, but I really didn't go too far in depth. Let me lay them out for you so you know who's who and who to look out for when you're watching. Starting off with the kids, we have Mike. I mean, she's a street smart New York City gal who likes all the things I mentioned before. She's very tough. She's very optimistic. She's a real go-getter, and she acts as the leader in the glue that holds the trio together of the main title. She's very good at thinking on her feet, which definitely comes in handy whenever they get into sticky situations.
Come on, Og boy. We got work to do. Well, that's it. Only one thing left that we need. Whose picture will be on the money?
It should be the Wagga Wagga.
Wagga Wagga?
It's our national bird.
As for Lou, well, she's a bit of a drama queen, or rather, I should say, a self-appointed princess who undoubtedly is spoiled by her governor father, Wendell. And she's quite obsessed with winning, almost to a fault. Like, even when the purpose of trying out something new, like watching TV, there's no point in winning at TV, but she has that like self-conscious need to feel important through winning. So I guess it pops up repeatedly. She's not the wisest or the cunning or even most modest of the characters that we see on the show, but she is eager to learn about Mike's culture while exchanging some of her own lore and knowledge that she's picked up along the way. And I kind of find her interactions with Lancelot at times are quite endearing. It's just a shame that Lancelot doesn't talk, but I think that adds to his cuteness and charm.
Come on, Lancelot, you can do it. Attaboy! Good, Lancelot, good boy! That boy's not bad. Keep working on it, you'll get it.
We also have Og of the main trio, who's a timid boy genius and is voiced by Dee Bradley Baker, of all people, who's quite known in the voice acting world. He has a gravelly voice and can invent all sorts of useful and at times distracting inventions on the fly using local materials of the island. Very much like the professor from Gilligan's Island. So that's a fun comparison to see. He is prone to the pitfalls of these modern inventions as they become apparent with certain gadgets and gizmos. But he is always willing to help Mike out or even the other villagers when they need his help. So I appreciate his resourcefulness and reliance for that reason.
A pump. We need a pump.
Hey, great idea.
Well done, Og.
Good math.
Hooray, I'm saved.
Moving on to animals, we have Lancelot, who's Lou's pet mute turtle that loves going on adventures wherever the trio goes, mainly because he likes being a part of the action, even if he's at times the hostage, as we see in the episode where the pirates catch him and try to make him into turtle soup. He's faithful, loyal, and caring, even if his owner is a bit too preoccupied with winning every sport Mike shows her. But he's shown to be quite an amusing character in his own right. We also have Pig, who's actually one of the few talking animals that exist on the island. She has an uppity tone to her voice and loves to talk philosophy with other vocal animals, particularly on Plato, Socrates, and Sigmund Freud. So she's quite intelligent despite being a barnyard animal. And I always wondered why they made that decision with these particular animals to have them talk and speak in such a way. I guess it's to counteract how, I don't want to say ignorant the islanders are, but they're definitely more bewildered and curious by the new things that they learn in each episode more than these three animals who just kind of observe and comment on things happening.
I say Socrates was a fool. It's bad enough the stuff would kill you, but it tastes bad.
We have Porcupine, who's also intellectual talking animal, occasionally interacts with the islanders. Very similar to Pig, not much to add here. And then we have Goat, who's the third cognizant animal who loves striking up conversations. And he tends to be the more agitated of the group, but also the clumsiest, as he often gets in the way with his horns or just pries too much when he's eavesdropping.
What on earth is that horrible noise?
Sounds like a turtle in trouble.
Sounds like a volcano erupting, if you ask me.
Lastly, we have Wombat, who doesn't talk, but he does prove to be a good match for Alfred Albonquintine, as he constantly escapes his grasp whenever he's being hunted down, and sometimes even mocks him, which I find quite amusing.
The jig is up! You're mine, Wombat! Oh, good lad, there you go. What say we discuss this over a nice hot cup of tea?
Moving on to the adults, or at least, you know, the main adults of the villagers on the island, there's Wendell Albonquintine, who's the governor of the tribe. His nasally voice is strikingly similar to Nigel Thornberry, but not voiced by Tim Curry, surprisingly. Though he does take an interest in Mike's activities and is fascinated by her culture, too, as it contrasts his understanding of their own. He also spoils his daughter, Lou Rotten, and knows quite a bit about the rich tapestry of both British and Polynesian culture formed on the island. So the characters often look to him for a history lesson when necessary.
As governor of this fair island, it is my duty to count the ballots. One, two, one. No, wait, I said that.
We mentioned Alfred Albonquintine a little bit before, and sad to say that based on what I've seen, there's not much to add to him. He's pretty one-dimensional. He's the husband to Marjorie, which we'll get to in a moment. And he basically just loves hunting wombats with his bow and arrow, but is a terrible shot, so he never quite catches the wombat. Though he shows a very fierce love for his wife and sometimes gives wisdom to Michael and Og whenever they feel stuck.
Hang on, you rascal, I'll get you yet. Where's my bow and arrow? Suction cups away!
As for Marjorie Albonquintine, the wife to Alfred, she's played by the famous voice actress Caff Soucie and is the loving matriarchy of the Albonquintine Islanders. She's helpful, she's supportive, and nurturing while naturally curious about Mike's new customs and technologies.
Gracious child, be careful!
Don't bust the hydrant, it's only a cup.
That particular cup is the only one we have left from the wreck of the good ship Betty Ann.
Then we have old Queeks Albonquintine, who's rather cranky and elusive, as he resides in a cave, shaking his cane a lot to everyone else and occasionally performing witchcraft to get back at other islanders or just causing mischief with his red voodoo mask. He's the oldest living member of the Albonquintine tribe, but he pretty much plays a trickster personality type.
Stop! I want you both out of here this instant! You hear me?
But the dust!
It's my dust and you can't have it! Now get out!
Oh, fine.
As for any others that you might see on the show, we did talk about the pirates before, but they don't have too much personality as well. It's just more like three pirates who occasionally show up and make a big fuss about some sort of plans to either capture something that they want from the Albonquin tribe or try to find buried treasure, but not very good at it. It's kind of just thrown in there, to be honest, although I like their design. There's like a main one with a captain hat. There's one with a fez and one with like a paper pirate hat. So take with it if you will. I mean, that's all I can really say about them.
Lad, stop chewing on me wooden leg. Now look what you've done. Me wooden leg needs a wooden leg.
Maybe it's time we did the next best thing. Maybe it's time we check the treasure.
What? Are you daft? The checking of the treasure is not a thing to be done on the spur of the moment by imbeciles like yourself.
I don't know, guys. It's not all that hard. Check it out.
And lastly, we have the Cuzzlewits, which is the rival tribe that appears on the other side of the island. Mike ends up befriending them because, you know, she's open to different people of all walks of life. Though Lou and Og and some of the other Algonquins are a little more apprehensive when they interact. Naturally, because they have a rivalry that has started due to their own customs that they've acquired from their forefathers when the islands was settled in the past. Don't have much to add there, although they're a little bit more primitive in their interactions. I mean, you got two boys who mainly talk in grunts, and then one girl who's pretty snooty and proves to be a fair match for Lou. So there's that.
He look like teapot.
What a pig with legs.
Let's tip him over.
And see if he can get up again.
And, you know, that's pretty much what I got for Mike, Lou, and Og. It's a short series. This is basic overview retrospective. So if you want to dig a little bit deeper, I definitely recommend you check it out on YouTube, which is the most reliable source as of right now. HBO Max, if it happens to reappear on that streaming service. Or you can find it on the Internet Archive, which does a great job of preserving classic Cartoon Network shows, along with Amazon Prime and Apple TV if you happen to have those services. Some episodes of Mike, Lou, and Og I recommend starting out with include Crash Lancelot, which is the pilot, Sultans of SWAT, Roller Madness, The Tube, Elephant Walk, A Boy's Game, and Whole Lot of Shaken, which I didn't really cover, but essentially involves Mount Henry on the island erupting with volcanic activity. And you can't have a good island show without some volcanic action.
Curious. I seem to be surrounded by molten rock.
I did note that there was a few other things tied to the show, but it's very, very scant. Like, it's breadcrumbs compared to some of the other show retrospectives I've done and have plans for. I did find a 2005 movie poster for an animated feature film that was supposedly in the works called Mike, Lou, and Og Journey Back to Manhattan, where we get to see Mike's perspective of New York with Lou and Og. But unfortunately, that didn't really materialize into anything, though it's set to be distributed by Warner Brothers and also have a fictional singer played by Sting. Billy Powers is the fictional singer's name, which I found very unusual, but cool. I also found a Toy Builders quote-unquote flash game via Cartoon Network Interactive in 2000, which is on a very old website. So I don't think it really works now, but you can see footage of it on YouTube if you're interested. It's as basic as they come, but hey, they did something to promote the show. And then lastly, there is a UK Region 2 DVD release of Mike, Lou, and Og DVD, but it only has three random episodes on it for some reason. I thought it would have 26 because the art on the cover made it look like it did, but unfortunately not. So what are my memories of Mike, Lou, and Og growing up? Well, I touched upon it before, but I did see the pilot when it first aired on the Cartoon Weekend where it premiered. And it was a ton of fun to tune into at the time. And it reminded me of my love of island and jungle themed cartoons and video games, ranging from the obscure Tomba on PlayStation and Crash Bandicoot as well, to things like that caveman character on Pogs with his island designs on there. Also, the classic Supo art style did keep me coming back for more, despite often missing the show on the early days of Cartoon Fridays and repeats. But nowadays, because of the convenience of the internet, even if you have to dig a little bit for the episodes, when I watched this for the retrospective, I was very relaxed by the chill nature of it. But don't feel pressured to binge the whole series, as the episodes are self-contained and don't really have an overarching storyline running through them all, especially due to the lackluster ending that just seems kind of random. The show may be a lot to handle as a complete series, but truth be told, it's quite comforting in small doses, so worth checking out episode two. So why does Mike, Lou, and Og matter in the context of Cartoon Network history? Well, foreign shows deserved a chance to be shown to an American audience in order to expose them to new cultures and ideas. It's very rare to have a show being produced by two different production companies in two different countries, and with a third in Korea helping out with the animation. So undoubtedly, it gives a unique look and feel. that can't be easily replicated by a show in either country on its own. Having Mike as a surrogate for the viewer helps us explore the hidden nuances of living on a deserted island with others who may not be familiar with customs and beliefs that we grew up with in our natural environment. And while there may be conflict or occasional clashing points of views at times among the characters, seeing them explore new ideas ultimately opens up their minds to a new world of possibilities that they wouldn't have experienced or considered otherwise, even if it's something as trivial as watching snow on a TV. The series may have also paved the way for fellow Cartoon Network Island show success in the mid to late 2000s, Total Drama Island, which has a much more active energy to it, I might add, to prime young audiences for far adventures on lands beyond our own. So, if nothing else, this show is a footnote during a semi-transitional period of Cartoon Network history, worth sampling at least once as you go through it. For further exploring, you can go to the Animation Magazine article or the Reddit Reacts to Mike Lewin Og links that I put in the show notes of this podcast. So here's our closing question. What do you find most memorable about Mike Lewin Og? Is it the theme song? Is it a particular character? Or maybe there's an episode you hold fondly in your heart. Share your thoughts with me in an email, which you can reach me at checkerchildhood@gmail.com. Or you can also comment on Spotify, YouTube, or Instagram to share your thoughts and memories with me. If you're feeling generous and want to help the show expand even more cartoon enthusiasts who could use a good dose of nostalgia paired with wisdom, you can also rate and review this podcast or even leave a comment on the episode so that it gets more engagement and gets out there more. Whatever you want to say about it, I'd love to hear it. All right, tune in next time when we kick some butt in the city of Townsville as we smash, boom, and crash our way through my top 10 Powerpuff Girls episodes. Just which ones will I handpick from the show's history? Some entries may surprise you as I concoct my own mixture of sugar, spice, everything nice, and yes, even Chemical X. Thanks again for joining me on this podcast journey, Toonheads. I'm truly grateful for you taking the time to be here today. It's a genuine treat for me to tell you why I love this show and all other Cartoon Network ones that I've covered so far, and that they're still worth revisiting today. And I know that once you take time to listen to this and go back to revisit those shows, it'll be like the joys of childhood TV viewing all over again. In spite of my consistent release schedule for the past 4 months of Check Out Childhood, I've been rather pushed to my limit juggling work, family, and other creative pursuits, so I've thought long and hard about this in making the decision to take a break from podcasting and nostalgia, as this first season of our show has undoubtedly worn me thin, and that's due to all the unseen effort that I've undertaken to just make this present on many podcast platforms, keeping up with social media, editing, recording, promoting, you name it. It's a lot to handle for one person, and I immediately shot myself in the foot by thinking I could do it all. Which I take responsibility for that mistake. As such, the day that comes when I return again is a little bit unclear right now. I'm confident that with any constructive feedback I'm given, I can take it and make any necessary tweaks and adjustments regarding the format, and it will make the podcast all the better for having it being applied. Till then, hard to say if I'll return or not, but thank you once more for listening, my cartoon-loving friends. I think it's about time that I check out for now. I've been your host, B-Dubs. Later.